Hi, I'm Kevin DeCristofano.
I'm Sean Flanagan. We are the Ninja Turtle Nerds, your weekly podcast where we discuss the Ninja Turtle comics one issue at a time. How you been?
I am fantastic. I am drowning in video games, as we keep talking about off air. I've downloaded, I've got this bucket list that at the beginning of 2022, might have even been 21, I made this list of games that I've owned forever that I've never finished, and I'm finally burning my way through them. So right now, at the same time, I'm currently playing Final Fantasy XII. I finished the Crash and Sane trilogy.
Nice.
I started the Spyro trilogy, which I believe I got for free with my Nintendo, that eShop money they give you for purchases. All right. But it's been on, these things have been on my Switch forever, and I've never finished them, so I'm checking them off one at a time. I'm liking Spyro a lot. It also kind of feels like a kid's game, though. It's very easy, but I kind of like that after how the challenge level Crash Insane trilogy was.
Yeah, it's funny because they're kind of from the same era, and it's just interesting to see two completely different things, but they're both platformers. Yeah, I enjoyed Spyro. I think the camera took me a little while to get used to, but like you said, you play N64, so no camera can defeat you.
Yeah. Well, the reason it wound up on my Switch in the first place is I have these, what do you call them, dark spots? These spots that I missed in my gaming history because I was mostly Nintendo growing up. And it wasn't until high school that I got PlayStation. And I had a Dreamcast, and then I think it was I don't think I played PlayStation 1 until my PlayStation 2, because it was reverse compatible. And at that point, I kind of treated the systems, I can't remember if I said this on the podcast already or not. It was in one of my notes. but I don't remember if I said this on the show already or not, but I realized at one point that I treated the Nintendo and the PlayStation as the family-friendly games I would always get on Nintendo, because that was their reputation. And the stuff I played on PlayStation was always, the more adult stuff. I played all the Metal Gear games. I played all the Resident Evil games.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy, I guess you could say, is kind of adult. But I never played the children franchises on PlayStation, is my point. I was always if I want that, I've got it on Nintendo. So now I'm going back and playing the Spyros and the Crashes, and Ratchet and Clank was another one I knocked off the list. Stuff like that.
Yeah, I think around the time those mascot games were coming out, that's kind of when I was getting into survival horror games. So I just wasn't in that space at the time. So there were games I had missed, but Crash, I beat, but anyone who... it's crazy enough to get everything in that, kudos to you, because
especially the first one.
Good God. But I still haven't played 4. I have it, but I haven't played it yet. So
yeah, I've got a big list just like that. Games I have got to beat. I've got some stuff going all the way back to PlayStation 2 that I might like Xenosaga. I bought way back in the day. I still have my PlayStation 2 Xenosaga game, and I never made it more than a couple of hours into that. But anyway, that's what's been going on in my video game world. On to the comic book world. My two interests, video games and comic books. Today we're here to talk about issue 17 in the Image Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles run. It is untitled like the rest of them. And just like the rest of them, the cover artist is Frank Fosco, story by Gary Carlson, pencils Frank Fosco, inks Mark Hickey, and lettering Pat Brusso. And then Adam Gazowski did some colors for IDW because they were originally printed in black and white. The cover date is September 1998.
Ooh.
September. It's getting cold out. So let's go take a look back at everything going on in September 98. This month in entertainment. In the movie theaters, we had Rounders, which is a Matt Damon, Ed Norton movie that... I don't think it's a very popular movie, but I'm sure you've seen it. You see everything.
Oddly, no. Rounders is in my blind
really?
Spot.
Really? I've seen it. That's so rare for like a movie like this, as something I've seen you haven't. But it's for people who don't know, it is the movie that is like credited with helping, not solely, but helping start the big Texas Hold'em poker explosion that happened around the early 2000s. So the movie came out in 98, probably came out in DVD in 2000, because stuff took way longer back then. And yeah, it's a movie where they play like an underground Texas Hold'em poker tournaments, and colleges all across the country started playing it, and then next thing you know, it was on TV. People used to watch poker on TV.
Yes.
I'm sure some still do.
I remember that.
But I don't think if you weren't of like between the ages of like 17 and probably 30 at that time, if you're a younger listener to this podcast, we cannot express how big Texas Hold'em poker was between like 2002 and like 2008, I'll say.
Yeah, there was celebrity something or other poker, wasn't there? Dave Foley hosted it or something?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, yep, that was a thing. They all played for charity, of course. Pleasantville also came out that month. The black and white to color Spider-Man movie. Tobey Maguire's in it.
Yeah, that pre-Spider-Man movie when he was in black and white. Yeah.
SLC Punk is another movie from this month. And the number one movie, I'm going to start doing these. I can't believe I haven't, but box office stuff. So the number one movie at the box office was also a movie that came out this month, was Rush Hour, earning 142 million. And it would go on to earn 244 million during its run. Huge hit.
That's interesting. I thought that was a summer movie from the beginning, but it must have just been the sequels.
I don't think they had faith in it. I think the wisdom of the time was that Jackie Chan was on his way out. And obviously he proved everybody wrong. Music. Let's go on to the music. The Billboard number one songs all month of September was I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith, because Armageddon.
Pretty much. Come out. Yeah, that song, I feel like that was number one for a while.
It's still played at like every single wedding.
Oh, yeah.
It's required. Except our weddings, because we didn't have music. Video games. Oh, I liked when I made a post about my wedding in between seasons there, and someone on Twitter thought you and I got married.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we didn't marry each other.
I thought that was very sweet that they thought that.
Video games. The Nintendo Power cover was F-Zero X, Fast Track to the Future. It's almost Back to the Future. Fast Track to the Future. And it says, Nintendo 64 reviews, Gek 64, Enter the Gecko. Do you remember Enter the Gecko?
I do remember Enter the Gecko, and that game...
Do you remember who did the voice of Gex?
Carrot Top?
Carrot Top does the voice of Gex in Enter the Gecko. And it's just a bunch of him reading a bunch of one-liners. The one I remember is there's like a level that takes place in China, I think. And one of the jokes he makes is, I'll finish this level, but in an hour I'll want another, or something like that. Some joke about how Chinese food makes you hungry later.
I remember the Star Wars kind of level, but that's it.
There was that, there was the China level, there was a horror movie type level, because you always have to have the Halloween one in there. Banjo-Kazooie had it, Mario 64 has the haunted house, like you always had to have the scary level.
I didn't beat Enter the Gecko, I know that.
I definitely did. It was another one of those we talked about a few episodes ago, though, how influential Mario 64 was, where it was one of those games where, okay, you've got a hub world and you collect things to unlock other portals in that hub world and get new levels.
Yeah.
Cruisin' World was also on the cover of this Nintendo Power.
Woo!
The sequel to Cruisin' USA. We're cruising the whole world now. Also, Blitz and Knife Edge, which I don't know what Knife Edge is. Power Previews, Wipeout, Winback.
Yeah.
I love Winback. It's a great Nintendo 64 game. I like Winback so much that when we had to pick names in French class, because you had to have a French name in French class, I picked the main character of Winback, who is Jean-Luc. And everyone thought I was picking it because of Jean-Luc Picard on Star Trek. And I was like, I don't even watch Star Trek. This is a lame video game reference that nobody's ever going to understand. But yeah, I love it. It was supposed to be like Nintendo's solution to not having Metal Gear Solid on their system.
Yep.
And not comparable in any way. I think even the play times are not comparable. I think you can beat Winback in something like 9 hours. It's not a long game. It's got a good multiplayer. It was one of those games, they did a lot of these back in the day where, I could be wrong about this, but I think they wanted you to beat it repeatedly because it would change a little each time.
Oh,
I remember
maybe.
There was a PlayStation 2 game like that called The Bouncer, and you could beat the whole game in like 6 hours, but you unlocked Oh, that was what it was. So each character had like a slightly different story path, so they wanted you to play through the game with each character differently. That's what it was. The Bouncer. It was the first Square Enix game on PS2. And it made me super excited. Like when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, what's a Final Fantasy on PS2 going to look like? These graphics are so amazing. And it looked nothing like The Bouncer. TV events when this comic book came out. September 1st, Cousin Skeeter and Wild Thornberries premiere on Nickelodeon. Two very good shows. Wild Thornberries I always associate with babysitting my younger cousins because they were super into that show and I would just put it on when I had to watch them.
That'll be the next one they do some creepy live-action hybrid thing on Paramount Plus too.
Probably. Yeah, are you referring to the Fairly Odd Parents one?
Yeah, they get that and some weird CG Rugrats.
Oh, I forgot about the CG Rugrats. September 12th, Animorphs premiered on Nickelodeon. September 12th, Animorphs premiered on Nickelodeon, and they're kind of like Ninja Turtles, because the Ninja Turtles are kind of like humans morph turtles, sort of. No, the humans would have just morphed into regular turtles. I don't know Animorphs, I'm sorry. September 14th, Total Request Live premieres on MTV. That's a show, and I've tried online finding, like, on YouTube and stuff. I wish I could stream old episodes of TRL, and I understand why you can't, because obviously the music licensing would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
And they don't want to have a show that's just Carson introing a green screen television and then cut the music video out and cut back to him. But I don't know. I really wish I could watch old MTV. I watched Total Request Live almost every single day when I was in high school. I was
addicted.
Yes,
we did.
I don't want to bring us down, so we won't get into which ones, but there are some like heavy news events that I had, like, my memory of them is the news being broken during Total Request Live. Like Kurt Loder came would like come out, remember, he did their news and he came into the studio and be like, oh, there was this blah 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 blah, and I was like, I am learning about this on TRL. That's crazy. September 19th, Pinky, Elmira and the Brain premieres on the Warner Brothers network. They had that going for a little bit.
I don't remember that.
That was like the last stretch of Pinky and the Brain. I don't know how long it lasted. September 21st, Will and Grace premieres. And that is the last TV event I have here. Oh, I have Saturday Night Live. They're back. Saturday Night Live, September 26th, was hosted by Cameron Diaz with musical guests, the Smashing Pumpkins.
All right.
That fits 1998.
Yeah, that's
kind of perfectly. Good. Cameron Diaz and the Smashing Pumpkins. Homer Simpson smiling politely. One of the best Simpsons jokes, I think. All right, let's get on to this comic book.
So,
which cover do you want to talk about first?
So you can find both covers.
Oh yeah, where you can find it.
Comixology or in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Urban Legends Volume 2. I mean, I always prefer the original cover.
Well, in this case it's way better, even though so the original cover, it's this, I don't even know if I can describe this. So Leonardo is in the foreground, shining his flashlight, and there's a giant leather head behind him, like almost in silhouette with bright red eyes.
It's very cool.
The thing I don't understand is why is there like a cartoon alligator? I can't figure out what's going on with that. Leonardo's not. He's holding it by the tail. Okay. So he found a baby alligator in the sewer, I guess they're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. I get it now. Yeah, it's a really, really cool cover. This is like a very, like, ominous cover, monster cover. This might be one of the best ones in Image.
Oh, definitely. It hooks you right in, whereas the reprint cover, I don't know. I don't like it. I know that.
It's not as bad as, I'll give it away, the reprint cover for next week might be one of the worst that they did. I can't blame Image for that. I'll say IDW, but yeah, this one's pretty bad. It's Leonardo crouched on some pipes, and then a weirdo who I don't even know if you'll ever even see. Oh, there's two of them. I didn't even see the other guy. There's two weirdos with shotguns, and it says, "A hunting we will go."
I don't know.
Which isn't anything that they say in the comic book, so I don't know why they added, like, I'm very picky about text on comic book covers, unless it's like a Golden Age thing or something, because they always had dialogue balloons.
Yeah.
But this is "A hunting we will go." That's not what the comic's about. And I know that covers are misleading all the time anyway, but still. No like. So let's take a look at the story, though.
We start the book. Leo, Donnie, and Raph are chilling in the cemetery, and Raph looks like his eye has reinfected.
So I had a note right off the bat here that I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
So did this hit you? The first time I read this issue, it didn't occur. Well, I can't remember the first time I read it. It was like 10 years ago. But this time, the first time for the podcast I read it, it didn't occur to me, but then when I reread it this week, it did occur to me that, do you think they were trying to do a fake out here?
Yes.
For Splinter being dead?
Yep, because that's the first thing I thought, because I fall for it every time I reread it. And then it's, oh yeah, no.
It didn't even occur to me the first time I read it, because I knew he wasn't dead. But yeah, last issue ends with Raphael cradling the dying Splinter in the astral plane. And then this opens with them standing over a grave, kind of like, so the grave is the POV almost.
Yeah.
And the turtles are staring at it, but you can tell they're in a cemetery.
Yeah. I mean, it works as a fake out. I have to say, it's a very good first page. It turns out the boys are trying to figure out who has infiltrated their cemetery base.
It even has Raphael saying, "I still can't believe it." Which is something you would say if Splinter had just died.
Yeah. So Leo goes to investigate, and turns out it's just a couple of rabbits. So really,
would you call these wabbits wascally?
I would. And then Raph kind of has this grandstanding speech about running the Foot Clan, and him and Leo argue, and it seems at least believable to me, because Leo's like, "Oh, I'll tag along," and Raph's like, "No, it confuses them. I'm the leader." So, mm-hmm. I think all that works, and Raph storms away.
Yeah, neither of them are being a jerk about it, which happens a lot in these Leo-Raphael confrontations. They're both. It was just like a simple disagreement. Like, Leo doesn't have much to do. And he sees Raphael leading the Foot Clan, and he's like, "Hey, how about if I help you out with that?" And Raphael's basically just like, "There can't be two leaders. It'll confuse them, and then they won't respect me as a leader as much." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, good point." Like, they didn't even really fight that much about it.
Right. So...
He does slam the gate, though.
He does. He locks them in, and Donnie decides he's gonna take a ride to Pittsburgh in the air car. So we,
which you can read all about in Pittsburgh Donnie number one on shelves this week.
Possibly the rarest TMNT comic.
Yeah.
So there's these guys hiding out in the cemetery, spying on the turtles. And I don't remember this guy taking photos in issue 12. Do you?
I don't think you saw him, and I guess I could go back and check, but I think it was one of those things where it showed one panel, and you saw just the camera lens, and like it went like click or something, okay. And then they never referenced it again until now, which is funny, because it's kind of a throwback to, you remember, I think Mirage issue 2 or 3, there's that guy looking at them through the telescope.
Oh yeah,
that doesn't pay off until like issue like way 9 or 10. Yeah.
So Leo's storming through the sewers and suddenly gets shot. I guess it's been too long since one of the turtles has been shot now in the comic. So there's a bunch of hunters just kind of walking through the sewer with shotguns, and Leo doesn't really know why.
Yeah, I laughed out loud at his description when he said it was wall-to-wall Elmer Fudd's.
Yeah, that was really good. Sewer. So even
speaking of Wascally Wabbits.
Even when he pops out of the manhole, there's a bunch of them on the street, so he's really trying to figure out where to go. And then the rabbits show up.
Like, so there's a I don't know. This is definitely nitpicking, but when he comes up to the manhole and then he goes back down to get away from them, they go in, the people with the guns, they go into the alleyway, and they see two rabbits.
Yep.
And I don't think there would be rabbits in that part of New York. I buy them in the cemetery, but I don't think they're going to wander that far into the streets of New York. That should have been a cat or something. I don't know. Maybe they wanted to keep the rabbit theme going. If this was like a episode of the 2012 cartoon, that would be like set up for somebody who's about to like mutate into a rabbit human. Them see Michelangelo would name him Easter Benny or something, like his name was Benny. And I love this Benny. Character I just invented. Easter Benny.
Turtles Armageddon, that's the real villain. So yeah, I agree. I don't really like that moment with the rabbits. And then you get a really weird panel. Like, it's cool that Leo's in shadow on the roof, but the hunter, the way he's drawn, looks like he's missing his bottom jaw.
So. Yeah, it looks like it looks like something taken out of Walking Dead.
Yeah.
It definitely looks like you could put this in a Walking Dead comic book and it would not look out of place. It's the same art style and everything.
So it turns out he's gone to Casey and April's, and he falls off the fire escape because
Casey greased it up good.
Vaseline trap.
Which is another thing. I'm not going to nitpick too much. I'm sorry that I'm doing two back-to-back here, but that was another thing where I was like, I feel like the turtles would be using this window entrance to April's apartment so often that Casey would probably have to run any booby traps by them. Because, I mean, but I guess the flip side of that coin is they're ninjas. They should know how to avoid these traps. But still, I feel like Casey wouldn't booby trap his fire escape window without telling the turtles about it. Because he knows they're going to use it.
He's just trying to catch some hairballs.
Yeah, he starts yelling, what is it?
I told you, hairballs, that if I ever caught you around here again, I'd gut you and mount you over my fireplace.
Oh, yeah, and then Leo's like, you don't even have a fireplace. I'm bleeding here. Come on.
I like Casey's reaction, though, where he's like, sorry, Leo. I thought you were... You've been shot, dude. He's like, yeah, yep. Really? So, you know, Casey patches Leo up. Shadow comes walking in, and I love this moment where she asks Leo if Casey kissed it better.
Casey's going to need to start working extra shifts to pay for all these gauze they're going through between Leonardo, Raphael, and probably Donatello. He's probably, the armor heals him, but still.
So Leo heads down to Mikey's apartment. Mikey's tapping away at his typewriter, writing a book that he might get $1,000 advance on if he gets it in on time. I like this Mikey writer thing. I don't know.
It reminds me of where IDW eventually goes with him having his podcast in Mutant Town. It's very much a Michelangelo project. He would definitely be the creative one. And sometimes people try to ascribe that character trait to Donatello.
Yeah,
because he's the smart one.
Tech-based.
And I kind of buy it. I'd buy Donatello more as, like, DMing, like, Dungeons and Dragons games or something. Like, that would be how he got his creativity out.
And then, I know this is way beforehand, but this stop fighting out there off panel and way to go, Leo, you woke him up. It made me think of Rise. I know that that's not what it was going for, because you turn the page and there's Splinter hanging out with Clunk in a wheel, in a rocking chair.
And Clunk looks like a Pokemon in this
little
panel.
Bit.
He's got like a Persian, not per, is that, what's the name of it? Per, whatever Meowth evolves into. I almost said mutates. Too much Ninja Turtles. Whatever Meowth mutates into.
So Leo explains there's a bunch of hunters around the sewer. He doesn't know why. And he says that there aren't any big gators left. And then he remembers about Leatherhead.
As if you could forget.
I don't know how you could. He's one of the best characters in the series.
Mm-hmm.
So April shows up with pizza, and Casey's face has changed, I don't know, 5 times over the course of 3 pages. So Leo thinks they're after Leatherhead, so he heads back into the sewer. You get his inner monologue again. I like that they've stuck with that, you know? Talking about the hunters.
It's really turtly, really TMNT-ish.
He finds one of the hunters dead and missing an arm and a leg.
Yeah, I was gonna say a little more than dead. this guy's missing half his body.
And it's
Image Comics, so they went all for it.
They did, because there's an entire trail of dead hunters now that Leo's following through the sewer, and he comes up to a wall that has blood spelling out "I waiting turtles," even though turtles is spelled incorrectly. So
it's okay. When something's written in blood, maybe he only had so much blood.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm running out.
Oh, an E. whatever. So we get one panel that kind of goes over the history of Leatherhead. I think they did a nice job with it.
Yeah, they crammed as much as they could into the single panel. They only, like, four boxes of exposition text.
So they go back into Leatherhead and how the Outrams are why he mutated, and he's trying to get to the Outram dimension, and that was one of the best issues we did way, way back when him and the Foot Clan teamed up. So Leo discovers Leatherhead, but he's all tied up.
And you don't mean he's busy.
No. And it turns out the Komodo Dragon brothers have tricked Leo.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah, they spring out of the shadows with their arms all open like, ah, it's the end of the issue. We have to look menacing. Ah.
So... yeah, it's an abrupt end, and it's, I feel like there could have been maybe one more panel or something, because I kind of forgot about the giant Komodo dragons at this point. So.
You always forget about the Komodo dragons. That's how they get you. They lull you into a sense of security. The thing I was thinking about when I was reading this, and I don't know, maybe I'm feeling very nitpicky this week, but the detail that caught my eye was like, who is offering this reward for the alligators in the sewers? Because that's why, I don't even know if we said it very well, but the reason the guys with the guns are in the sewer is apparently in the news, somebody got attacked in the sewers, and somehow it got out that a giant alligator was attacking people in the sewers. So somebody put out a reward for this alligator, and now there's all people in the sewers with guns trying to hunt this alligator.
And what's funny, that's what's funny about
this reward
is because then you see the reveal and you're like, so did the Komodos like write a thing and put it in the paper? Like, how did they get word out?
Even whoever's offering them, no, they didn't. And I'll tell you, I don't know if we should spoil the next issue, but you find out that they are not, they're definitely not the ones who printed the story because of something in next issue. But what I want to know is not only who's offering the reward, but like, I can't imagine the city would be okay with like every Tom, Dick, and Harry taking their rifles out and going into the sewer, you know? Yeah. Like, they wouldn't even want you down there unarmed. Like, remember how crumbly the bridge was in that Leatherhead issue? It's not safe in the sewer. The city would not let people just roam around with guns like, oh, we hear there's an alligator down here. This is like something you'd see in like a Mystery Science Theater horror movie where there's like a small town and there's a blob or something on the loose and like everyone gathers up their guns and is like, we heard there's a monster, you know?
It's just funny because, I mean, if you've been reading along with us this whole time, the sewers of New York and turtles are basically gothic castles underground.
Yes.
So, there's no, you know,
complete
building.
With drawbridges and hidden rooms.
So they're not up to code. So
bottomless, both bottomless pits and water that's leagues deep.
Yep.
I don't know if I'm using that word correctly, but
enough room for giant.
You could ride a submarine through these sewers.
Well, there's giant creatures down there.
So the Technodrome in the cartoon show being below the streets wasn't far off from what the comics had.
Yeah, I guess not, huh? I guess it kind of makes sense. But, I gave this a solid 4 because it's getting back on track again, at least.
I gave it a 4 as well, same score, and I wrote, I feel like anything with a Leatherhead, any issue with Leatherhead is at least a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I agree.
I am kind of shocked at how sparingly he's used in every version of Ninja Turtles.
But he's always used well.
He should be in, well, I guess he would be a villain if he was in Shredder's Revenge.
He probably is. He's probably got his jeans and his vest and whatnot.
By the time this comes out, that game's been out forever. You know what I noticed editing the podcast is I'm going to have to put a voiceover for this because we recorded those before Cowabunga Collection. And before, well, no, Shredder's Revenge had been announced, but Cowabunga Collection hadn't been announced yet.
Yeah.
And we did a bunch of segments talking about games that are in the Cowabunga Collection. So those are going to time out pretty perfectly when those episodes go up.
Sometimes we win, so I'll take it.
Yeah. So what is your title for the issue?
So I get really lazy on this one. I just called it I, Alligator.
Because of the I, what is the thing says? This is I waiting turtles.
Yeah. So I was like, I, Alligator.
Even though none of the people in the sewer had a pith hat, I titled it The Sewer Safari.
Oh, I like that. That's better.
We're hunting the elusive alligator.
It'd be funny if they ran into that guy that was hunting Leatherhead in that issue with the bridge underground.
This might be a good nostalgia bomb for someone. So that's something Sean and I have quoted since high school. I don't know if anyone remembers this old TV commercial for Pokemon Snap, the Nintendo 64 game. It had this like safari guy, and we always quote him where he says, today we're hunting the elusive Pokemon. I don't know why it always stuck with us, but
I don't even think they use that in the new game.
Nope. So that seems like all we have to say about this issue. It's, you know, in summation, you remember in the first season I used to summarize everything at the end? This would be a really easy issue to summarize. So in summation, there's rabbits in the cemetery. That's going to come up again.
There's
later.
Rabbits everywhere.
There's rabbits everywhere. There's people in the sewer hunting an alligator because the newspaper said there's alligators in the sewer attacking people, and there's a reward if you can bag it. So, there's people in the sewers. Leonardo got shot. He got healed at Casey and April's place. Then he went back into the sewer. Michelangelo's working on a novel. What else is going to come up again? They got ambushed by the Komodo dragons at the end here. They found Leatherhead tied up.
Donnie's in Pittsburgh drinking.
So, yeah, that is everything that happened this issue. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We're going to throw it on to Kevin in the future to see what's going on the week this issue comes out. And, yeah, let us know what the future's like, Kevin. Okay, and that is our show for this week. Thank everybody for listening. You can find us at TMNT Nerds on Twitter. You can email us tmntnerds@gmail.com. And we also have another podcast out there. If you're into video games like we are, we were talking about that at the beginning of the episode, it's Nintendo Therapy. So look for Nintendo Therapy wherever you find your podcasts. And we will be back next week to continue this Image Comics run. See you then.